Good morning, and welcome to Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I am joined, as always, by my fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Marianne. I actually have an apron on.
Oh, you do? I know. You're ready. What's for lunch?
In case we have to cook something here, just to prove that we know how.
Oh. Bet you almost any amount of money we're not invited in the kitchen up there. Oh, my gosh. It is full on spring.
Yeah. Well, and that word spring reminds me, it was such an unusual year for Springer salmon. I think this is the first year I never had any. I don't go fishing, but a lot of people around me do. But always somebody, you know, there's always someplace we can buy it, or
yes,
someplace that we have it at a restaurant, or somebody gives us some, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Most often, Dale's son Ian is such an avid fisherman, and then, you know, he would catch some, but just nobody caught any. And I remember, did I read something, was it in the paper, in the Daily, or the Astorian rather, just about people who are saying that this is a bad year should know what an understatement that is.
Oh my gosh, where is our salmon?
There just wasn't any. And then people are saying they're not going to be able to fish again till fall or something. I don't know.
I don't know, but any fishermen. I adore fishermen from afar,
yeah,
because I'm crazy about salmon. And I live with a really wonderful person who's not real crazy about fish but loves salmon.
Okay.
So usually if we're going to have fish,
that's what you're going to have.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Yeah, totally.
It's so good.
Oh.
But it was just, I always so look forward to the Springer salmon. And I just block my brain. It doesn't matter what it costs, you know, because it's really expensive, but it's such a hyper local thing, and
yeah,
I just love it.
Yeah.
So that was a weird
shock
thing.
It's shocking.
Just a weird thing. Because I was trying to find it.
Well, we are lucky that we have a lot. We have a huge array of fish available to us, other than salmon.
Well, and then so many different kinds of salmon.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Which is nice, too.
Yeah. Yum. Well, besides not Springer salmon, what have you been cooking?
What else I haven't been cooking is, you know those weird little dumpling fry pan things that I like?
Yeah, you mean the...
So like where you take just a little gob of dumpling meat, you put it in the fry pan, and you just put a wonton over it, and you squish it, and you just cook it like that rather than taking all the time to make the wontons. It's just a super lazy method. Well, I saw somebody else on the internet make them, and they totally brown the meatball before they put the wonton over it.
Okay.
And I thought, well, maybe that's better because the wonton where it touches the pan gets pretty hard, pretty crispy.
Yeah.
And even though you put water in it. Anyway, it was really good. And I think that's the advantage that those wontons have, is that the top is open like a shumai, but shumai you just steam.
Yes.
But you put it face down in the pan, and then the meat gets browned, and brown meat is tastier than steamed meat.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and so then it's browned all over inside, and that was really good.
Good tip.
Yeah, oh boy.
Well, hey, I like the whole thing about not doing each, you know, making each dumpling until you have a plate full and then cooking them.
Well, and as you get older, there's just a certain point where you make them and then you're like, carpal tunnel.
Oh my God. Carpal
tunnel.
Eat
what I have and then I'll go to the surgeon.
And it'll be so worth it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I have been, this is cooking adjacent.
Cooking adjacent. This
subject, because I have been cleaning out a kitchen that I stocked in a little studio apartment we have above a garage at our place. And it's been lived in for 9 years by a wonderful bachelor who moved out of our apartment to move into a house with his the love of his life. Yes, very wonderful. And it was great to have him there the whole time, but I had not set foot in that place, and now we're remodeling that situation, and I needed to go in and clean everything out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, the wonders of having a bachelor in a kitchen for 9 years. It's quite remarkable.
Do tell.
Well, I had put a lot of things that I had extra of up there, so that because originally we put this studio apartment there so that when Tom's fabulously huge family, anybody came to visit, our house is purposely
guest roomless.
Yes, and we had this place for people. And then years went by and nobody came to stay there. And we were like, heck yeah, you can, of course you can live there. So we enjoyed having him. But then when I went to clean out all the cupboards, I discovered that all of my grandmother and mother's revereware that I had, I have some at my house, of course. I love that stuff.
Yeah, everybody does.
Nobody's ever made anything really better than that. All of it had been like shoved in the very back of a cupboard, like a cobwebby back of a cupboard in favor of some like Teflon frying pans and saucepans that are all really scratched up. And you can just only imagine how much Teflon you've ingested over the years. So, and everything has a exotic veneer of sticky.
Ew.
Yeah. Like pulling everything out of the cupboards. And it's just because things have been in there for so long and
untouched.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, but I found treasures like that revereware. Yipes. So that was, I thought, the whole time I was doing it, I thought, what is it going to feel like when somebody has to clean out my kitchen someday? Because we all think of things as being valuable and a lot of them aren't really, only to us.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So I have a whole lot of revereware now, I can tell you.
Yeah, right on. Well, and I just, I deceive myself about what I'm going to use.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just have so much bakeware, so many different things. I mean, just, it's insane. And then I look at the individual thing, I'm like, no, but I love this cannoli pan. You know?
I have been progressively more ruthless about getting rid of stuff in my house because it's taken up space and I don't use it.
Yeah.
And when I look at it, it's like, is it going to hurt me to give this away? Yeah. No, it's going to elate me. So anyway, back to cooking.
Well, I have a friend, Dion, and she was talking about, you know, childhood foods, things that you eat when you're a little kid. And do you know what her mom used to do? You know, those giant, I think they call them jumbo pasta shells.
Yes.
You know those big ones that like you stuff with ricotta cheese for Italian stuff.
And they're like knife and fork things. They're
They're not like one bite. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're big. Well, her mama used to boil them up and then cool them in the fridge and then put tuna salad in them for her when she was a little kid. And she had lots of brothers and sisters. And so they could just like pick one up and eat it and then wander off and come back and get another one. And it was just kind of finger food, you know, in the 60s.
I think it's brilliant.
I thought it was a really cute idea.
And it sounds good to me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you could do chicken salad, anything that is. I mean, I wonder, would crab salad be any good? I don't know.
I don't know why it wouldn't be good.
Yeah,
shrimp salad, any of that kind of stuff that's refrigeratable and, you know, it's made and then you just stuff it in it.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I thought that was really cool, and I'd never heard of anything like that.
Wow. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
It sounds really good.
Yeah.
I, for the first time in a long time, I made a meatless red sauce.
Oh, yeah?
For pasta, and Tom really liked it.
Really?
And I always feel like I have to put some Italian sausage and saute up some or make little meatballs out of it. Or I always feel somehow compelled to put that animal protein in there, whatever it is. And I didn't. I mean, it wasn't vegetarian. It had anchovies. But it was basically just really good tomato sauce and anchovies and garlic and a little bit of red chili and shallots. That was it.
It sounds really good.
It was delicious.
Yeah. Hey, at some meat departments, you can buy, like you just ask for it at the counter, you can buy the spice that they put in their Italian sausage.
Oh.
And so, like, you know that sausage, potato, kale soup that Italian soup.
Yes.
I can make it for vegans, and I can just put that spice in the broth.
Oh, there you go.
And that works really well. And I think that that's a good thing. So if you ever want that flavor and you don't want meat, you can do that.
That's great.
I usually, for meatless sauce, I use Marcel Hazan's recipe.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a really simple one. It's butter and tomato sauce, or rather, I think it's canned tomatoes.
Does it have chunks in it? I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah. Canned, San Marzano tomatoes, yeah. Just to make it good. And then I can't remember if there's half an onion or a whole onion, but you just cut it in half and then you almost blacken it. You brown it severely in a fry pan and just leave that in the sauce, put everything else in there, and let it cook. And it's a really, really delicious sauce. So it's vegetarian, it's not vegan, but it's really, really good.
Yeah.
A famous sauce.
It is, and rightfully so. I do like anchovies in there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't think it's been forever since I made a red sauce that it didn't have anchovies in it, because I just love that. And yeah. Also fennel, which I think for me is the pervasive flavor of Italian sausage.
Yep, yep.
I mean, that's the main character of it is fennel.
We're the queens of fennel, you and me. Pretty soon it'll be summer. We're like, fennel salt, watermelon, fennel salt.
Yes, that's right. Fennel's coming into its own any minute now. Oh, already asparagus. Having asparagus every week.
Yeah.
When
it's in season, like now, we even have it for breakfast, eggs and asparagus. It's just so good.
So good.
Yeah, eggs, toast, and asparagus.
Yeah,
it's just
kind of perfect.
Great. Yep. Yeah. And then when I have it, if I'm grilling anything, just whatever room there's on the grill, it's filled up with asparagus. And if we don't eat it, then that's fine. Then it's cold asparagus the next day. It's so good. It's
it
just
is
the
so
best.
Good. I know. I've been just doing it steamed and then toss it on the grill so it gets a little bit brown.
Yeah.
Barely steamed.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then just a bowl of it with a little curry mayo or something on the side that you can drag one through it, and it is so good. And
can
it
I
is
tell them your recipe for curry mayo?
Oh, please.
It's curry.
Do they have a pen to write
and a big piece of paper?
Yeah.
It's curry and mayo.
That's it.
Curry
it's
powder.
Mayo and curry powder to your taste.
Yeah.
I'm a light on the curry. I want to taste it, but I don't want the mayonnaise to be yellow.
Okay.
But I have also had somebody else make that for me, and it was really gold,
mm-hmm.
and it was delicious. So I don't think you can do it.
Yeah, that's how I do it. I do it pretty strong because I just love curry.
Yeah,
I
me
just
too.
Do.
Me too.
You know, I'm from Minnesota, and it always surprises me. You know, asparagus is such a spring, such a delicate thing.
Yeah.
And it just grows everywhere there. It's just, you know, it's in the ditches. It's everywhere. It's the weirdest thing because why wouldn't it die? You know, why wouldn't it die over the
year? Because it's Minnesota, and anything that even resembles grass loves Minnesota.
It's a prairie.
I'm telling you, the wild rice, the asparagus, there's something about Minnesota. Those grass-like things love it there.
Isn't that funny, though?
Yeah. It is. We're so precious with it. You know?
I know.
We're
I know.
So protective of it.
I know. You'd think that if it's, you know, you have to be careful growing it here, that for sure it would die there.
I want to take a sec and remind everybody that Food Talk is a co-production of KMUN Community Radio and North Coast Food Web. And seriously, I'm not going to belabor this, but I am going to remind you that the two best websites in the world are KMUN.org and NorthCoastFoodWeb.org. And if you're not going to one or both of those every once in a while, you're missing out. Don't miss out.
I'm excited for the farmers market to start the Sunday market.
Oh, the Sunday market in Astoria. And I believe that, I will come prepared with a full roster of farmers markets next time you and I meet, because I know that there are one or two that are already in progress. So that is, I think that's one of the best things to celebrate about summer is markets.
Yeah, and I went to the Beaverton one a couple weeks ago. And
ooh.
That one starts really early, like February, but that was great.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I did an ersatz chicken parm.
Ersatz?
Yes. Parm. It was ersatz because.
Not a bona fide.
No bona fides anywhere on the plate of this chicken parmesan.
This is going to need some splaining, Marianne.
Well, because I am lazy and or in a hurry and or both, and I didn't want to do the pound the chicken out, bread it, you know, make the egg wash, blah, 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 blah. I had some boneless, skinless chicken thighs, and when I flattened them all out to dry them after I rinsed mm-hmm. them off, I was like, those aren't very thick. We're just
these will work.
Yes, and I'm not breading. I'm just going to, and I just sautéed them until they got color on mm-hmm. both sides, and then put some of my meatless tomato sauce on it and let it bubble around until okay. they all got friendly and called it, you know, I called it good, and then put it on a plate and dumped a mountain of Parmesan on it. And nice. There you go. And Tom said it was really good.
I like stuff like that. It's like halfway between chicken parm and chicken cacciatore.
Yeah, exactly. But neither.
So there's seven of you listening, and so I think I might have said this before, but the way that I remember when you do decide that you're going to bread something, the order to do it in is the word February. F is flour, E is egg, and B is breadcrumbs, and that's the order that you do it in. And then I don't have to look it up, because to this day, if I make lasagna, I can't keep in my brain what order I'm supposed to do stuff in. I have to look it up. It's so sad. It's just so sad. But there's no corner of my brain that's assigned to lasagna, and nothing will open up because it's full. It's just full.
No space available. Sorry. I don't think that we necessarily need to retain anything that we can easily find out.
Look up, yeah.
You know, and now we have computers and phones. And the world at our fingertips.
Yeah.
So I am remembering less and less all the time.
I know.
Just remember how to use my phone and my computer. That's all I need to know.
Yeah, yeah.
Although you have told us many times that the internet lies about recipes and food in general and many, many other things. So we have to proceed with caution, but yeah. Still it is out there.
Oh, and then just when you get a recipe, man, you have to see if it's written by AI, because they just do kind of a conglomerate of everything
yeah,
that is on the web, and it's going to come out mediocre at best, and most likely it will fail. Just make sure it's from a person, not AI, because
yeah.
that's so prevalent now. You look up a recipe and there's a recipe, and you don't think, you know, was this written by a machine that's never cooked in its life?
Yes. I look up a recipe I want because, as you know, I've offloaded most of my cookbooks because everything's out there.
Yep.
But when I'm searching on the web for a recipe, I always search for it as by the author. So like Ina Garten's roast chicken.
Yeah,
or,
yes.
You know what I mean? Then yep. I feel like I'm getting...
Yep.
What I asked for, not yes. somebody's opinion of the perfect roast chicken.
Yeah, like, yes, some
yeah.
mechanic.
Be specific.
I can do this.
Yeah, right.
It's easy.
Here's how I like it. Anyway.
Here's how I think it should be made, though I've never made it. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Ay, ay, ay. Well, I did see a recipe recently from a credible source. About the world's best scones. Did you see it?
Oh, I don't know. No, I don't think I did.
Okay, there's a blog called Bake Time that I get through.
No, I've never seen that one.
It's a newsletter. I think I get it through the New York Times, but it is just about baking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about this recipe for perfect scones. And the interesting thing about it to me, it makes me want to try it. And I actually have a really good recipe for scones, but I can't make them because I will eat them. Tom doesn't care anything about a scone.
Well,
you know?
Okay. Here's a couple things. I'm going to now talk scones because
yes.
you made me.
Yeah.
No,
I
no.
invite
so,
you.
So scones, when you make them, like say you made your dough and you shape your scones, just bake two of them and put the rest of them in the freezer. They freeze perfectly and they bake from frozen perfectly. And that's a thing that I think sometimes people are afraid to do. But you've got raw scones that are shaped. So like I usually do them like in a disc of dough. You know, it just looks like a big hamburger patty. And then I whack it into 8 triangles and then just cook 2 of them, one for me, one for Dale, bake them and then stick the rest in the freezer.
I didn't think about freezing, but that's a good way to keep me from eating the entire batch.
Yeah, it works really, really well. And then you
I
can
wonder
have
if it works for drop scones, which is I prefer drop scones.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that it would because of the dough. And then when you see recipes like the world's best scones, I have a recipe for scones that I really like. And so when I see recipes like that, even though they might be the world's best scones, I'm very happy with my scone recipe. And so I just don't even look at them because there's so many other things that I only make pretty good, you know, that I would really like to find the world's best, like Reuben sauce recipe or something like that, because mine is fine, but my scones are good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And how many scone recipes do you need? The reason that this one appealed to me is because I have a bad attitude about traditional scones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're too dry.
They're dry. They're hard. Mm-hmm. They don't even, they're so, designed to last an eternity that you, even when you warm them up, they're not soft.
Yeah.
You know, they have no give. So I have a recipe that I love for scones. And every time I want a scone, I make it. And in fact, I use it for strawberry shortcake and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And they're drop scones. So they're not triangles.
Yeah.
They're just a blob of dough. But it's thick enough that you can slice it in half and make a shortcake out of it if you want to. But I like that kind that is a little lighter and not so...
A little fluffy.
Yeah, a little bit fluffy.
Yeah, and that was dense. Your first word in your brain isn't brick.
Yeah. And you just got to wonder how they have remained so steadfastly in the cuisine of, you know, in Britain. And in fact, probably all of the British Isles are into scones. And Scotland's version of shortbread, which weighs, you know, a metric ton per bar. Holy cow. Yeah. What the heck? They're sturdy. They're sturdy.
Sturdy women. So if I'm making shortbread, I just use my scone recipe, and I paint the top with egg white that I beat up a little bit, so it's just a little bit bubbly. And then just sprinkle a bunch of sugar on top, and I use that sparkling sugar, that kind of big square sugar that has facets that shine everywhere. But and then often when I make scones, I'll just stick my thumb in the middle of the scone and make a well and put a puddle of jam in there.
Oh, I have had your jam scones. Yeah, yum. Yeah. What a good idea.
Yeah, and that works really well, and it's just kind of fun.
Yeah. It's a treat.
And the scones
it's like
are...
an outside-in Twinkie, you know, where the surprise is on the outside instead of the
but
inside.
But better.
Way better. Although, you know, sponge cake, and I'm not daring to compare a Twinkie with real good sponge cake, but you make real good sponge cake.
Oh, thank you.
That your pumpkin sponge cake, fab. Oh, it's fab.
You. Thank you. You know that woman, Mary Berry?
Yeah.
And she has, you know, cooking shows and stuff.
Yeah.
She said on one of her cooking shows that the scones turned out better when the dough is a little wet, and that's true.
Uh-huh.
So you know how scone dough is always so dry, just giving you, you know, foretelling the future of the baked good.
Setting you up ahead of time.
For your expectations.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There ain't enough jam. I'm sorry. Not.
What's your favorite jam? Do you have a favorite one?
My favorite jam is a fluid situation, but right now, pumpkin butter.
Oh, numb.
Which I know is crazy in the spring, right?
No,
so good.
Okay. And I think my favorite is cherry.
Oh, yeah.
I just like really good, you know, cherry jam. But, and same thing, it's fluid. Sometimes it's blueberry. Sometimes it's black cap.
Yeah. Sometimes you make jam. Do you do that every year?
No. You know, I haven't done it for a while. It's just really hard work.
I know.
And I have a couch.
and a brain.
Yeah. So yeah, I made just extraordinary amounts of jam for a while because I made it for the animal shelter bake sale. I mean, there's a couple years I made 120 cases of jam for that thing,
whoa,
which is really, really a lot. And it's picking a lot of blackberries too. But then the farmer started filling that field with bulls instead of heifers. And so that was, you know,
the end of your berry picking day.
Well, it's just that it kind of put a wrench in it. I couldn't be over there as much as I wanted to.
Oh, my
and
God.
Then, and then it turned out I didn't want to.
Yeah. After not doing it for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I don't make jam. I grew up with a grandmother who made jam, and I just have this abiding memory of the jelly bag hanging from a knob on a kitchen cupboard door, yeah, with a bowl underneath it. You know, I mean, she had conquered grapes in the yard.
Okay,
and
wow.
So we always had grape jelly, and it made the whole kitchen smell good, and it was great.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I have no desire to do it whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, and as I get older, it's just, I just don't want to do that whole canning process. It's just, it's hot and it's work. So I've really gravitated towards small batches of freezer jam. So then make it, and then you don't have to go through all the sterilizing and the canning and the everything. And also the keeping it on the counter for 2 days completely insulated while it ever so slowly cools off so it doesn't, like, you know, not seal. And just little batches of freezer jam.
Which I think is also kinder to the ingredients.
And yes, so
when
true.
When we get
yes.
those fabulous strawberries pretty soon, it's just it's cruel to do a cooked jam, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And you're right. It does taste better because it just doesn't, goes through a couple minutes of cooking to make the jam, but then it doesn't go through all the canning, you know, the 10 minutes in the boiling water. And I think you're right, that just denatures the strawberry.
Yeah. Not that traditional strawberry jam ain't great, but yeah, I think that the freezer jam is the way to go with those hoods.
Yeah.
Those hood strawberries, holy cow. If there are any left after you get
drive home.
there aren't really, seriously. I could eat an entire crate of those on the way home. Take the scenic route. My car's having battery trouble. It's good for me to drive farther.
Yes, yes.
Ay, ay, ay. Well, we are so close to the fruit stands, the produce stands, the farmers markets. Holy cow. It's
exciting.
I'm
very excited. Yeah, it really is.
It really
and then
is.
Already lettuce is beautiful.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I had to make my own salad mix by buying all the pieces because there was not local salad mix yet where I was shopping. But just being able to buy all those fresh lettuces and the chicories and all of that, so great. It's so great.
I can't in my brain think what chicory tastes like right now. Isn't that sad?
Oh.
I got a chicory blank.
Bitter. Like radicchio. Yeah.
Okay. I got a blank.
It is.
I mean, I've had it.
Yeah.
But apparently that shelf.
You need to get some.
And
remind yourself.
Yeah.
It's really bitter, very delicious.
Okay.
And it loves vinaigrette. Any kind of vinaigrette you deign to give it, it rewards you with gratitude. So I could eat entire just radicchio salads. Or you know what else? Hmm. Fennel salads.
Yeah, yeah. And fennel in potato salads is really good too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, we're running out of time. Linda Perkins, you want to sing us out?
I'm driving my radicchio, I'm driving my fennel. That's not really a good song, is it? I'm driving my vegetables, I'm driving my green edibles, driving my vegetables around. I am driving my broccoli, my Fibonacci broccoli. That's that other stuff from Manesco. Driving a bushel of corn home.
Bye.
Support for this program comes in part from the Astoria Co-op, an independent grocery store in Delhi owned by the people who shop there. The co-op welcomes everyone with no membership required, offering fresh produce delivered from nearby farmers, prepared foods, and local organic products. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Marine Drive. More information at astoria.coop.
You're listening to KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5. streaming at KMUN.org. Use the KMUN app to hear us on your phone or tablet, or tell your smart speaker to play KMUN. Today's weather, sunny with highs in the mid-60s. It's Monday, May 4th. Music is next on KMUN. It's 10 o'clock.